The challenge.
We have to do something, Rongi said. This is our fault.
It might be our fault, but it's definitely not our problem, Karima muttered as she hastily packed her portion of their camp. It's not our problem. She repeated it like a mantra that might keep them safe from harm.
I don't understand, Lek said. Who is this Xu Ping An guy? Who are the Yellownecks? I thought we were dealing with the Autumn Bloom.
The Yellownecks are business that we don't want any part of, Wong said.
He rolled up the sleeping blankets with tight, nervous hand motions.
They're not in this life for money or freedom. They take glee in pillage and destruction. They're wanton killers. And Xu Ping An is their brains, heart, and soul.
He was a bloodthirsty madman before he spent the last 8 years locked up and dreaming about revenge, Karima said. We heard the stories. He used to call himself the General of Pandimu and claimed its residents were beholden to him for the protection he provided.
Lex scratched his head.
Where's Pandimu?
Nowhere, Karima said. It's the name for the world he made up himself. My point is he's unhinged.
Earlier, as they'd mumbled excuses about needing to leave the company of the Yellownecks, Xu had seemed easygoing, without Mok's pettiness or wise outbursts of violence. He'd assured them that though he wished to throw a feast in their honor, a little show of appreciation, anything really, they were free to go with all debts to the Autumn Bloom and Yellownecks repaid. Kiyoshi knew that veneer of civility meant nothing. Men like Xu simply waited for the right moment to drop it and reveal the beast behind the curtain.
I don't know how he's alive, Rongi said. She paced in circles around the remnants of the campfire. I've read copies of reports sent to the Earth King by Genju himself. Xu was listed among the dead at the Battle of Julu Pass. This doesn't make sense.
Karima kept her argument directed at Kiyoshi.
Look, they're what? A couple hundred strong now at the most? Fewer since the Kangshan decided to dine on rocks? They're not an army like they were in the past. We can simply wait until the governors summon a militia force to deal with them. I bet Tay is the one who rides out to meet him.
Governor Tay was currently riding at the head of a one-man column in nothing but his pajamas. It wasn't clear whether Karima and the others knew how old he was. But he could be 100, and he still wouldn't know how to deal with a man who'd given Genju fits.
That sounds perfect to me, Lex said.
His face was unrecognizably dark.
The more dead lawmen, the better.
He left the camp to get Peng Peng ready for departure, satisfied with his contribution to the debate.
Xu first started out with smaller numbers than he has now, Rongi said. If more Yellownecks come out of hiding and rally to his banner, we're back to the dark days after Kuruk died. We're not back to anything, Karima shouted. Xu is the abider's problem. As far as we're concerned, he's a finished job. You don't go back to a job you've already finished.
Years ago, I passed through a town caught in the wake of the Yellownecks,
Lao Ge said, reminiscing calmly, like it had been a mediocre vacation he'd once taken.
I saw what happened to the residents. They'd been...
He twisted his mouth, trying to decide what word to use before settling on one.
Stacked, he said.
He made a layering motion with his hands, alternating one on top of the other. Karima still wasn't swayed.
We run away from trouble, she said. Not toward it. That's our policy. It served us well in Chameleon Bay, it helped us survive in Hujiang, and it'll pay off here.
What do you think we should do, Kiyoshi?
Lao Ge said.
Given your newfound taste for making decisions of life and death?
His question was dripping with petulance. but the rest of the gang didn't know about the botched assassination. They were still thinking of her command to preserve the lives of Tay's household while pulling off the raid. No one had argued against her back then. It didn't seem like they would now, either. The group fell silent as they waited on Kiyoshi's response, offering her the chance to tilt the scales conclusively. Her head swam. A single moon ago, she was the weak link, not the shot caller. The others were putting too much stock in her being the avatar, conflating bending versatility with leadership. She'd grown more capable in the days since Hujiang, but not wiser. Kiyoshi fell back on the one philosophy she was well versed in as an earthbender. Neutral Jing. "We wait and see what happens," she said. "But we can wait from a higher elevation. Load up Peng Peng." Rongi and Karima, the two opposite voices in her ear, united to share a worried look with each other. They loitered in the air, a physical stamp of Kyoshi's indecision on the blue and white cloth of the sky. Peng Peng floated inside a cloud that Karima had pulled around them. The waterbender stood upright in the saddle, swirling her arms to prevent the tufts of vapor from parting and revealing their position. Lek took them slowly over the yellownecks so they could monitor the movements of Shu's force. Kiyoshi was keenly aware that they occupied a literal halfway point between fleeing and staying, perhaps ruining their chances for either option. She shook the nagging doubt out of her head and peered down below. The column of men drifted slowly away from Tay's palace like ants on the march. They formed a solid mass, Shu no doubt at the front, with the occasional scout sprinting ahead and returning back to report. A colony sending out feelers.
"I hope they're heading toward a militia outpost," Lek said, still clinging to some ember of hate for the law. "Then we could see a good dust up from here."
"They've stopped by a rice field," Rongi said. "Maybe they're trying to pick it? The second harvest wouldn't be ready, though."
The farming knowledge of Yokoya had rubbed off on her. Kiyoshi watched as the crops provoked some kind of response in the Daofei. Years ago, when she was still living without a roof over her head, she would sometimes watch her fellow insects crawl through the dirt in search of food. The motions of the bugs always started slow, indistinguishable from randomness, full of hesitant backpedaling. Until within the span of a fingersnap, they turned into a focused swarm. The army lingered next to the green burgeoning grain, as if the collective had sniffed a target of interest. Dark lines began to grow across the field. She puzzled over their meaning until she realized it was Shu's scouts infiltrating through the high stalks of rice, parting and trampling the plants. Her eyes darted to the opposite end of the field, where a small house and barn stood. Smoke from the morning's water boil puffed gently out the chimney. Kiyoshi had been so preoccupied with the safety of the household staff of the palace that she'd forgotten about the people outside the moat. Large estates often had tenant farmers managing their private lands. In that little house was a family, a target for 8 years of Shu's pent-up wrath. Trying to split the difference with Neutral Jing had been the wrong choice. "I made a mistake," Kiyoshi said. "We have to get down there, now." Karima made a choking, indignant noise.
"What exactly are we going to do?"
The lines had nearly crossed the rice field.
"I don't know," Kiyoshi said. "But I can't stay up here and watch anymore. Drop me off and fly away if you have to."
A scream came from the house. The occupants had spotted the Daofei closing in on them. The memory of swordsmen wearing yellow around their necks likely still haunted this region of the Earth Kingdom. Karima swore and mashed her fist against the saddle floor.
"No," she said.
If you go, we go.
She flicked the cap of her water skin open and pulled the cloud vapor inside, condensing it into ammunition.
Once we hit the ground, we'll follow your lead,
Wong said to Kyoshi. Lek groaned, but brought Peng Peng around in a tight turn, descending as fast as it was safe to. The others gripped the edges of the saddle and hung on for dear life.
Thank you,
Rongi said to Karima, the wind whipping her words, forcing her to shout. It was the nicest she'd ever been to the waterbender.
You're true companions of the Avatar.
What good is that if we're dead?
Karima yelled back, though she blushed just a bit.
Please don't let us be too late, Kyoshi prayed as they sprinted toward the barn.
She'd chosen that building over the house, remembering the setup in Hujiang. The tiny hut wouldn't have fit a big enough audience for Xu and Mok's grandstanding tastes. The contingent of Daofei stuck outside the doors, sprang to their feet in alarm, but relaxed as they drew closer. The paint still caked on their faces made the Flying Opera Company instantly recognizable. The ghosts in red and white were honored guests of their boss. Kyoshi pushed deeper inside. She could see over the heads of the crowd to an empty space in the back, where Xu probably was, and shoved her way through until she found him. The leader of the Yellownecks sat on a bench, calmly reading a book. He must have missed literature in prison and taken it from the house. Against the wall behind him, Mok and Y stood guard over a woman and her son, who couldn't have been older than 7 or 8. Cowering and sobbing to themselves, dressed in simple farmer's garb. They'd been beaten, their faces bruised and bloody. Her anger at Xu laying hands on a child paled before the sight of what he'd done to the boy's father. The Daofei had tied the tenant farmer up and hung him by the wrists over the rafters with a long rope, several men holding on to the other end so they could raise and lower him at Xu's command. Underneath, they'd set up a fire and a rendering cauldron full of boiling water. It was big enough that if they dropped him, he would be fully submerged in the vessel. The farmer's big toes dangled in the liquid, and he screamed through his gag. Kyoshi ran up and kicked the heavy cauldron over, spilling water in the direction of the Daofei holding the rope. They let go, and she caught the farmer in her arms. She heard the hiss of blades being drawn as she laid the man on dry ground, twitching in pain but still alive. Xu didn't look up from his book.
You spilled my tea, he said.
He licked his finger and turned another page. She'd come to the conclusion that Mok's affected nonchalance was a pale imitation of his elder brother's. Xu had probably learned it from someone else. Like Tay. They were all copying their predecessors in a cycle that went on and on. Kyoshi drew strength from the fact that her own links went back further, among the most righteous in history.
Xu, she shouted. Stop this! Let them go!
She heard shuffling behind her and a familiar reassuring warmth. Rongi and the Flying Opera Company stood at her side. Xu clapped his book shut and stared at Kyoshi. He'd combed his long hair and cropped his beard as best he could.
First off, it's Uncle Xu to you, he said. And second, this man is an abider. He worked for those who imprisoned me. He grew their grain and took their coin, which makes him another weight on the scales I must balance. If you can't handle this, you're not going to like what I do to the town of Zigan.
Kyoshi's fists tightened. If they were playing roles, then she would imitate the strongest, the bravest, the best.
You don't get Zigan, she snarled. You don't get any town in the Earth Kingdom. Nor this farmhouse, for that matter. You get the free air you can fit in your lungs, and nothing else.
She heard her friends tense up beside her.
Shu preemptively waved off the Daofei who were ready to hack her to bits.
Kiyoshi, was it?
He said.
Kiyoshi, I'm eternally grateful to you and your compatriots for rescuing me. But you're young, and that's why you don't understand. 8 years of my life were stolen from me. Thousands of my followers. At your tender age, what would you know about that kind of injustice?
They're all the same, Kiyoshi thought. Every single one. Whether they clothe themselves in business or brotherhood, or a higher calling only they can see, it doesn't matter. They're one and the same.
A lesser man might quit in the face of a setback that large, Shu said. But not me. I relish the work, not the reward. I will get what I am owed.
They look at themselves like forces of nature, as inevitable ends, but they're not. Their depth is as false as the shoals at low tide. They twist the meaning of justice to absolve themselves of conscience. Shu smiled benevolently and tried to find his spot in the book again.
The world is on the verge of forgetting my name, which means I didn't carve the scars deep enough last time. I'll do better with the second chance you've given me, Kiyoshi.
He motioned at Y, who still hovered over the mother and son. Y shoved the woman onto her hands and knees and yanked her head back by her hair, exposing her throat. She screamed. They're humans like us, made of skin and guts and pain. They need to be reminded of that fact.
I said stop!
Kiyoshi shouted. There was a backing to her voice that punched through the air. Y hesitated, remembering the last time he'd drawn his knife in her presence. Kiyoshi pointed at Shu.
Shu Ping An, I challenge you to face me on the Lei Tai immediately.
It was the one idea that could have forestalled both him and his army from exploding into a frenzy of violence. Maybe Shu didn't think much of Kiyoshi, but he had to respect the challenge. The code that empowered him in the eyes of his followers demanded it. There was silence from the crowd as her words sunk in, but Shu responded as if it were the most normal request in the world.
Challenges are meant to settle grievances, he said, dabbing the pad of his forefinger with his tongue again. What insult have I given you?
Your existence, Kiyoshi spat. She didn't know it was possible for a group of hardened killers to gasp collectively. Now Shu paid her mind. He put the book down and stood up. His men parted to form an aisle between him and the barn door. Only Kiyoshi and the Flying Opera Company stood in the middle, barring the way.
Bending or without? Shu asked, perfectly at ease.
Bending, Kiyoshi said. It was the only way she'd stand a chance. She remembered her fans in her belt.
Weapons. Anything goes.
She felt the flare and turmoil of Rangi's emotions beside her, but heard no protest.
Very well, then. The prospect of a duel registered on Shu about as much as a fly landing on his nose.
Perhaps he'd already assessed her abilities, and that was the amount of threat she represented.
Let's get this over with.
It was a lopsided arrangement. Six on one side of the rice field, hundreds on the other. In the middle, a team of yellownecks used shovels from the barn to pile dirt into a raised platform. With an earth-bending Lei Tai, the fighting surface had to be shaped from the element, not made of wood like the one in Hujiang. Kiyoshi had declined to assist with construction in the hope that stalling would create more time for a governor's militia, an Earth Kingdom army, for any help at all to arrive. At this point, she'd take Tay and a couple of angry servants armed with brooms.
This was your plan?
Karima said as they watched the dirt flinging into the air.
It wasn't a plan so much as a thing that could have happened and did, she said. I noticed none of you tried to stop me.
There's little else you can do, Wong said. Especially if you want to stop him from raising Zegon to the ground. It's right next door, and the nearest Earth Kingdom Army outpost is a 5 days' march away.
Kyoshi stepped behind Rongi and embraced her, feeling her warmth. None of the others commented on their closeness. I'm sorry I keep doing this to you, she muttered, her lips close to the firebender's ear. Rongi leaned back into her.
Today you get a pass. As the Avatar, you would have tangled with horrors like Shu on a regular basis. This might be the first time you've done your duty since we left Yokoya.
It felt good to get a decision right, though it was uncertain how long she'd live to enjoy it.
Kyoshi, can I speak to you for a moment?
Lao Ge said.
In private?
The others frowned, slightly confused. As far as they knew, there was no particular relationship between Kyoshi and the old man that warranted a conversation prior to her imminent death. Lao Ge was more likely to give her a few shots of wine for courage than a pep talk. Kyoshi followed him behind a curtain of rice stalks.
What do you think you're doing?
He snapped once they were alone. He'd never taken such a tone with her, not even after she'd saved Tay's life. You think it's wrong to fight Shu? She said. If Lao Ge was going to argue that the Yellownecks were good for the health of the Earth Kingdom, then he truly was as loopy as his outward persona.
No, you fool. What I mean is that if you wanted Shu dead, you should have struck him down without notice, blindsided him. That is the way of the predator.
He seemed positively disgusted at the notion of an honorable duel.
Facing him on the Leitai and hoping for the best is the mentality of an herbivore, braying and shaking its antlers to look good in front of the rest of the herd, he said. I wanted you to drink blood, not chew grass.
Kyoshi took a step back. She bowed deeply before him, fully and formally, holding her angle at length. It wasn't the deference of a student to a teacher, but rather the rarely used apology bow, only trotted out in the Earth Kingdom in moments of true sincerity. And she kept it going until she heard a snort of surprise from Lao Ge.
I'm sorry, Sifu, she said. But I'm not doing this as a killer. I'm doing this as the Avatar, even if the world won't know it.
Lao Ge sighed.
Stop that. You're embarrassing both of us.
She straightened to see his wrinkled face arranged into an expression of scorn. It was ruined only by the genuine concern in his eyes.
Figures that the one time I find a pupil I like, she tries to be as mortal as possible,
he groused. Well, maybe Shu might suddenly pass away where he stands in the next 5 minutes, Kyoshi said to any spirit or legendary creature of death nearby that might overhear and take pity on her.
Death doesn't work like that,
Lao Ge said. He reached up and patted her on the shoulder.
You're on your own.
The Daofei finished stamping the platform flat. It was smaller than the one in Hujiang. There would be less room to run. Shu hopped onto the Leitai first, swinging his arms to loosen his shoulders. He'd changed into a vest and a pair of pants cinched at the ankles. Mok and Wai stood in his corner, the elevation of the platform hiding them from the chest down. If anything happens, take Peng Peng and get out of here, Kyoshi said in an ironic echo of what Rongi had once told her. Find someone with the power to intervene before the Yellownecks grow their numbers again.
What if it's the Gravedigger? Karima asked.
Kyoshi paused. She wondered if her hatred would follow her into the afterlife, whether the purity of her revenge was so important that she'd turn away his help in saving lives. She didn't answer the question. Instead, she gave Rangi one last squeeze and hopped onto the platform. She was still geared from last night's battle. The face paint had started to flake off. Kiyoshi steadied her trembling fingers against the handles of her fans. The stage-like nature of the lei tai added the tension of a performance to the stakes of a duel. Had Rangi been this scared, elevating herself to fight? Facing Tagaka had been less nerve-wracking than this. The battle on the ice had happened too fast for her to think each step through. You weren't as afraid back then because Genji was there, on your side. The thought held too much truth for her to swallow. She drew her weapons. Shu grunted and sighed as he hugged one knee to his chest and then the other. "For the last time, Kiyoshi," he said, "are you sure about this?" "You and your friendliness can go straight to the bottom of the ocean. You should ask yourself that question," she said. "I think your kind has a little too much certainty." An unnamed young Daofei, rather than Mok or Wai, stood nervously in between them, with his hand raised. Kiyoshi spread her fans and settled into a 60-40 stance that Wong had taught her, equally good for striking or bending. Shu bounced lightly on the balls of his feet, preferring not to signal his approach to earthbending. "Ready!" the referee shouted. Kiyoshi licked a drop of sweat off her lip. It tasted like grease. She scuffed a little more weight into her front foot. Shu began to inhale through his nose. "Begin!" the young man shouted before diving off the platform to safety. Kiyoshi summoned her energy, starting with her connection to the ground and extending it through her weapons. She would overwhelm her opponent with a barrage of earth. But she was too slow, and she was playing the wrong game entirely. Shu thrust his arms forward, two fingers extended from each hand, and struck her fans with a bolt of lightning.